The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Monday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course, SiriusXM channel 158. It's Gil Alexander. It's my little buddy Kelly Bidlin, everybody. Losing weight.
Hey.
For our eyes. What a glorious Monday morning it is, Kelly.
It is.
Wes Reynolds will join us to talk Masters and perhaps PGA moving forward. Also, whatever else is on his mind, sports betting-wise. Paul Sporer on Major League Baseball. And Carl Sack with the NBA playoffs. Now we're on the cusp of the play-in games, specifically Tuesday and Wednesday. Also Friday as well, before we head into the real playoffs beginning this weekend. He'll have projected series prices, what he would have had the numbers at, what they are currently in the 3-6 and 4-5 series that are already set. Does he have any plays in the play-in games? We'll get into all that. Kelly's thoughts on those as well.
I made a couple bets.
Already?
Yeah.
Okay.
Bets, yep.
All right. We'll get into that. Some NFL draft stuff as well. I don't know if you know this. Special numbers game investigation reveals that the NFL draft is 10 days away. 10! Can you believe that?
And nobody has any idea where Shedeur Sanders will be drafted.
Nobody has any clue. It's a little earlier this year than normal. Usually like, you know, the 28th, the 29th.
I thought the same thing. Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
Creeping up a little. It's in Green Bay in 10 days. Okay. But first, oh, what a weekend it was. The 89th Masters, Rory McIlroy, your winner.
Yeah.
A birdie on the playoff hole, the 18th hole. Playoff against Justin Rose. I'm sorry to the JVTs of the world who had Justin Rose at 100-1. I know our buddy Brady Cannon, the founder of the Long Shots podcast, had him at 115-1.
I did not realize until the last few holes, I didn't realize how many people were on Justin Rose for this tournament.
There's a bunch. For us, Kelly, though, it ends up being fantastic.
Let's go. Especially you, man, with double downing on Friday and stuff.
Yeah, it's easy. You know, it's funny. That's one of those things also that on a Monday morning when people find out you had Rory and then you double down on Friday, it's very easy to sort of be like, oh, yeah, well, Rory, I mean, he's great. Of course you did. But Friday morning, I came in here. We talked about this on a numbers game. So I had him plus 750 and plus 725 preflop. And then Friday morning, I just remember he was coming off the 72 even par first round. Where he just absolutely crapped the bed in on 15 and 17.
Yep.
I believe that's the technical term. And he was, at that point, he was, what, 6 strokes behind Justin Rose, if I'm not mistaken?
Sounds right.
Yeah, 6 strokes behind Justin Rose.
Although this weekend was a marathon. I don't remember anything that far back, Hill.
But I came in here, I'm like, I'm not going to let those two. Like, there's the narrative that this tournament is in his head. He's tried 10 times to win the career slam. He's not done it. There it is, 15 and 17, and I was like, I'm betting him again. 14-1, plus 1255 were a couple bets, and I also bet him for low round in round two at plus 1850. By the way, I also bet him for low round in round three at 16-1. That was a dead heat with Zach Johnson. He won the round two, low round outright. This ends up being the biggest golf tournament of my life.
It was awesome. I wanted to give you props. I mean, it was, look, I was on Rory. That was awesome. There's one thing to be on Rory. We walked in here Friday. There's one thing to be on Rory and not count him out. I wasn't counting him out after what happened at the end of Thursday. There was also, though, my Twitter timeline full of tweets of how could you possibly back this guy at Augusta? This is what he's going to do. He's going to lose it at the end. And Gil walks in here on Friday where nobody else did I see this. And it was low round of the day, and I'm going back in with another outright, man. So props to you, man. That was awesome. That was
very
well
done. I mean, first of all, let me just quote Will Hill yesterday. We were obviously on a group text exchange.
7 shots back. Thanks, Dave Ross.
7 shots back after Thursday. And Will said it best. He goes, after yesterday, imagine not liking sports. This was incredible yesterday. What drama. What a final round. Rory ends up, after shooting a 66, 6 under 66, both on Friday and Saturday, he comes into the final round, 2 up on Bryson DeChambeau. And he double bogeys. Rory comes right out and he double bogeys the par 4 first after getting in the fairway bunker. And right there, he's tied with Bryson after one hole. Then Bryson birdies the par 5 second while Rory has a messy par. DeChambeau's up one, literally 2 holes in. That's it. Turn of events. So it wasn't feeling that good right at that moment. But then it was the first change in the roller coaster, because on the par 4-3, Rory birdies it while Bryson bogeys it. A right to left putt for birdie missed long. Rory's up one again. And then on the fourth hole, Bryson bogeys after a tee shot goes wide left. Rory birdies it. Rory's up three after four. So he comes in up two. He's down a stroke after two holes. He's back up three after four. Fast forward to the ninth. Rory's still up three. The approach on the par four ninth puts both almost equidistant from the hole. Rory birdies it. Bryson bogeys it. Rory's up four on not only Bryson DeChambeau, but also Ludvig Åberg and Justin Rose. And that's when Jim Nance on the turn says, "Is it nine holes to glory for Rory?"
I thought
the first Nanceism of the day.
Yeah, I also thought that one though was a look. Maybe no. It's not just being a better with a ticket, because obviously we saw it played out. I was not counting my money yet, Gil. Are you kidding me? With those names that were behind,
No one was counting yet. But after let's go to the 11th. Rory's still up four on Rose, five on Bryson. Bryson is kind of this is where Bryson begs out right here on the 11th. Rory's a few inches away from being wet on the par 4 11th. Remember that one that was trickling towards the water and stopped? And then Bryson goes right into the water. Rory ends up bogeying it, but Bryson double bogeys it. So Rory's up four on Rose, and Bryson's kind of done. So his competitive portion of the day was over, Bryson's. But Rory's still up four, even after the near miss. And that, by the way, that's one of those holes where it doesn't go in the water. You're like, it's just his day, right? It's going to be Rory. So after Rory has a stress-free par on the par 4 12th, he's up four on Rose and Åberg. Then he's up three on Rose, because Rose, all of a sudden, quietly in the background, not pictured on your screen, is starting a birdie fest. So they go to the 13th, the par 5 13th. Again, Rory's up three, comfortable. And he lays it up, because now he's in conservative mode, right? He's like, I got a three-stroke lead. He took a peek at the scoreboard. He puts it into the creek on his third shot, out of nowhere. And if he ends up losing this tournament, that's the shot they show in perpetuity, forever. He ends up double bogeying, and Rose, after he birdies 16, which is the fifth birdie for him in six holes, it is tied just like that. Just like that. Rory's got five holes to play. Par 4, 14th, Rory bogeys it after going in the straw when his putt stops on the lip. Rose, great chip onto the green on 17. Then he goes wide left on a three-footer. Remember, that's where Rose could have taken the lead, but he missed a little gimme putt. So it was a three-way tie at this point at 10 under. Rory, Rose, and Åberg. Did you think Ludvig was going to take it at this point? You have an inkling that he might do this?
Oh, yeah. I wasn't counting him out.
So they're tied at 10 under. Rose is through 17, Åberg through 15, Rory through 14, then Åberg ends up parring 16.
Actually, let me rephrase. I thought he was a much bigger threat than Justin Rose at that point.
So we go to the 15th, the par 5 15th, and this is the beginning of the how many great shots is Rory going to hit, and then how many putts is he going to blow? It's a three-way tie. Rory's second shot, 7-iron, over the water on the par 5 15th, giving him an eagle opportunity. Remember, he did the same thing with a 6-iron on Saturday. Nance proclaims shot of a lifetime, which I like when Nance does actually do stuff off the cuff. And then he misses the eagle opportunity, settles for birdie, but he gets the lead, right? He's up one on Rose with three to play for him. He's up two on Åberg, because Åberg bogeys 17. And then Åberg would go on and make a mess of 18. So that was the end of him. But Rory's up one. Three holes to play. Tremendous tee shot on the par 3 16th. But then Rose hits that long birdie putt on 18th out of nowhere to tie it at 11 under. And you're like, oh my God, I thought Rory was going to do this. Rory can't make the birdie putt on 16. He pars. We're tied at 11 under with two holes left for Rory. Rose is in the clubhouse. Two-stroke lead over the rest of the field. 17. Rory approach on 17. An even bigger shot of a lifetime with Rory egging the ball on to get over the trap and onto the green. Go, go. Birdies it. Rory's up one. One hole to play. Rory McIlroy's about to get the career grand slam.
Incredible shot.
18. He hits the approach into the bunker. You're like, okay. Well, it's not the worst chip. Chips it to about 7 feet from the pin. The putt for the tournament? Misses left. We're going to a playoff.
Ah!
Both at 11 under. Oh, my God.
I hedged off a bit. I know you didn't. Good on you, but...
Nope. 18-10, 18-10, 18-10. That's what you do in a playoff at Augusta. Sudden death, all of them. They go to 18. They both hit great tee shots. Rose, spectacular approach onto the green. Rory, an even better approach to within feet of the pin. Rose's putt just wide right, just pushed it wide. Rory to finish it off. Good. McIlroy wins the Masters. Here's Mike Tirico on the call. Okay, maybe not.
Yeah, we're not.
I thought we had Mike Tirico on the call. All right. Unbelievable. Jim Nance's call. The long journey is over. The long journey is over. McIlroy has his masterpiece. Now, Jim Nance will tell you that that was off the cuff, but he had masterpiece ready to go. Get it? Masterpiece. Piece of the career slam. Oh, he's so good. So clever. But canned and planned. Unbelievable. Just an unbelievable roller coaster of a round of golf. And I get back to what Will said, which is imagine not liking sports. Forget if you had a bet on it. And then Rory breaks down emotional. Do you get a little misty on it all?
Oh, yeah.
I did.
It was awesome to see. Come on. This guy's been chasing this for 11 years. It's incredible.
Authentic reaction. Just an authentic reaction. Just the pouring out of emotions. He has his career slam. And as we move forward to Quail Hollow in the PGA, where he's won four times, ought he be the short shot?
Yeah, him and Scotty both 5-1 right now at DraftKings. We'll have to see how the next few weeks play out. But, man, wouldn't shock me, Gil. Wouldn't shock me. It's three wins this year.
There's a couple other takeaways from the Masters we have to get to. Things we need to file away for next year and years beyond. We'll get to that. And the NBA playoff series projected numbers. Next.
VSiN, the sports betting network.
Unlock your winning edge with an unbeatable offer. Get full VSiN Pro access to everything we do from now through August 1st for just $59. Sign up now and save 50% off the regular monthly price with a daily email recapping all the best bets for VSiN hosts and guests, exclusive betting splits from DraftKings and Circus Sportsbooks, complete with trends and analysis to sharpen your game, 24/7 video on the VSiN Watch app, plus full VSiN.com access featuring advanced analytics and pro betting systems, every sport, every edge, one low price. Don't wait. Get full access through August 1st for just $59 at VSiN.com/subscribe. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Always appreciate the feedback from folks. This is from Jesse Welch. Man, Rory's reaction to winning yesterday had me choked up big time, and I had zero exposure on him, even though I intended to play him live at some point and missed my window. But that was well worth it. Las Vegas 514, yo. Took Rose during the playoff. Thought Rory was toast. The guy did not make it easy on himself that whole round. Sheesh. Glad he finally got it done. Chris Heath. No comfortable Katie bar the door yesterday. Sure wasn't. Josie714. I'm the only Korean you'll ever meet that does not play or watch golf, but my eyes were glued to the TV for the back half of the Masters. This without having any money on it. What drama.
Oh, can I stop right there, Gil? This was... I mean, from golf majors of some of the best that I mean, it ranks right up there with some of the best I've ever seen. I don't care. I'm going to throw majors, not just Masters. Oh. It was great. I almost was, I mean, of course, I loved that I had a Rory ticket. At times, I wish yes. I didn't have money on it because I was so worried about bets that I felt like I was missing one, just a great sporting event from just watching it.
Oh, here. That's interesting.
I thought it was an awesome sporting event.
It was incredible.
Also listening to, did you catch what Bryson said after the round yesterday?
Mm-mm.
We were kind of building it up, headed into Sunday. Obviously, it was Captain PGA versus Captain Liv. And hey, they've kind of been the flag bearers for each one of them, even when Rory's gotten no support, even from the tour himself. So glad he won yesterday.
Rory, as you pointed out, could have gone ape on everybody.
I wish he would have gotten up there and blasted like 17 people. And then everybody that was tweeting about him probably losing. But Bryson goes... Bryson said they didn't say a single word to each other the entire round.
Which I did catch that.
Just to add to the sports of this, the sporting event, that is two gladiators going up there to win a green jacket who didn't speak a word to each other.
I also caught one time when Bryson went far left on a tee shot. Did you catch this? And, you know, you are supposed to, like, let, you know, four, you're supposed to let the patrons know. But Rory, who was already walking ahead of him because he had already had his tee shot, did a very demonstrative far left sign.
Oh, with it.
Yeah, I was like, nice. Jared Albert, imagine not liking sports. Tried to tell my friends Rory outright all week, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. Keep up the good work. Yes. This is from Jack Larkin at Sport Trade. Check this out. This is the Sport Trade betting exchange, right? This is some other pricing highlights. So this is done by time. 5:23 Eastern, right? Rory, 96.5% chance of winning. This is at some point in the late stages of the final round. By 6:18 Eastern, Rory is a 56% proposition, Rose 42%. So this is after Rose had tied him up. I would imagine this is after Rose's birdie on 18. 6:41 Eastern, Rory's lining up for the winning putt on 18. He's a 94% chance. He bust that out, missed it. And then at 7:04, and so after that, 7:04, Rory's back to just a 56.5% proposition right before the playoff. That's amazing. And here is Mike Tirico on Sirius XM Radio calling the final putt.
Rory back and through, and he's made it! He's done it! It's a grand slam roar at Augusta National. Rory McIlroy on his knees, bent down in emotion, clutching his head. He's won the Masters. He's won all the Grand Slam events. He's the sixth in the history of the game to enter golf's greatest group.
Good for you, Mike Tirico. Yeah. Well done.
Good call.
Well done. Courtesy of SiriusXM on that. Here's a tweet, because this leads into the other conversation I want to have. Shrek McPhee. Lost in the madness was Patrick Reed. WTF was that finish? Anyone know the number for top American? Fat Pat is legitimately an Augusta savant. And I just want to say this beyond the Rory thing, like our takeaways heading into future, just we've got to file these away. I know we've known this, but maybe we don't have to, maybe it wasn't in our permanent file. It needs to be in our permanent file. Patrick Reed ends up finishing third in this tournament. Third. He has, since he won the Masters, I believe four top tens now. Is that true?
Yeah, we brought up going into the tournament. I didn't bet it, but the this is Pat Mayo, heard it on his podcast, man. He, the most profitable bet you could make going back to Scheffler's first win, all the way back to that tournament, the most profitable bet you could make at the Masters at top 20 on Patrick Reed.
And then, and by the way, remember he eagled 17 on a bounce. Remember 13, he had a very short putt for birdie, and he ends up bogeying that hole. So what could have been even more for Patrick Reed, who finishes third outright by himself. And then the other one is Justin Rose. Yeah. How many first round leads has he had now in this tournament?
Five. He passed Jack Nicklaus this week. Pastor Todd, whatever. It's five. It's five, though, for Justin Rose.
By the way, here's the visual representation. This is from Sport Trade, Jack Larkin. This is a visual representation of win probability. I don't have to explain it beyond just the colors here. If you could just throw that up on the screen, guys. Look at that. Just a roller coaster. Absolutely unbelievable.
It was insane. So many great shots. So many terrible shots. It was insane. But yeah, it was... Gil, I made note already for next year. Patrick Reed, top 20, and Justin Rose, first round leader. This is like draft day, right? Where Costa writes down whatever notes, like, just bet him, just bet him. Like, that's all I'm going to tell myself next year. Just bet him. Whatever your numbers say, whatever anything says, throw it out and just make those bets.
All right, Carl Sack is coming up. He's going to talk NBA project, what his numbers said the already established playoff series ought to have been, juxtaposed against what they already are. Kelly, I'm going to give you a crack at this here for a couple minutes before we get to Carl. What we have, again, for those who are unfamiliar with the format, is we have the two play-in nights, Tuesday and Wednesday. So tomorrow night, it's the 7-8s Eastern and Western Conference, the winner of those will be the 7 seed in the respective conferences.
Yeah.
On Wednesday, it's going to be the 9-10s. The winner of the 9-10 will play the loser of the 7-8 on Friday to determine who will be the 8th seed in the respective conferences. What we already have are the 4-5 and the 3-6s. Those series have established prices. Those will begin on Saturday. The 1s and the 2s will play the eventual 7 and 8s starting on Sunday. So for the established 3-6s and 4-5s, if you will, I'll do them. Well, we don't have necessarily the chronology on these, but we'll do it East and West. Well, we'll do all four of them together. The biggest favorite of the 3-6-4-5s is the Knicks, who are, I'm showing, nearly a $4 favorite in a best of seven against the Pistons. The Knicks, nearly, by the way, I love that the first round, I hate that the first round is a best of seven.
I, you know, as an NBA fan and better, I would be very okay with them going back to five.
It should be fine. Okay, so the Knicks, well, we're showing actually minus 425 at DraftKings. So the Knicks, by far, of the four established series, are the big favorite over the number six seeded Pistons in the East, plus 330 on the Pistons on the comeback. The coin flippiest of them all, and this is actually high because I've seen this much shorter. We're showing the Nuggets as minus 160 favorites in the 4 or 5 out West, but I've seen that as low as minus 130.
Oh, it's come down. I think myself and everybody else and their mother bet the Clippers as soon as this opened.
I'm sure you guys I know did. NBA hardos all bet the Clippers, who end up, by the way, again, with the number five position in the West. Combination of events, but largely on their overtime win over the Warriors yesterday. So of all these, like maybe you've already answered it, the Clippers are the value of all four?
That was my favorite bet. I got plus 130. That was my favorite bet at that price. But as you mentioned, Gil, this has swung. You're looking at the best I see is plus 110 now. I mean, look, Denver still has home court. They still have Nikola Jokic for as like I'm not laying games, right? I'm not laying a game and a half with the Clippers. I do really like them though at that number. I played a couple though. I played that. I laid Pacers. I laid minus 195. I didn't see a 190 here in town, and that is over $2 most places now. Pacers against the Bucks. I just don't have a ton of confidence. Dame is the big question, whether Dame's going to be playing in this series or not. And I don't really have the answer to, but man, the way this Pacers team has played down the stretch here lately, you know me, I don't go up against Giannis much. I love him. I love Giannis. I love those Bucks, but man, I think the Pacers should be pretty big favorites in this series. The other two, I think I'm completely staying away from, Gil, because there are, I did not expect the Knicks to be this big a favorite, so I could only recommend the Pistons, but I'm not betting it. I still think the Knicks get by. If you wanted to look like over total games, I wouldn't be shocked at all if this goes 6 or 7 games with the Knicks. And then Wolves, Lakers, same kind of thing. I think the Lakers, this is a pretty good matchup for what we look. We've seen Luka Doncic tear apart this Timberwolves team before. I think we could see that again. But man, at price, the Timberwolves are tempting at that at plus money.
Who's our T Wolves guy? Zach is our T Wolves guy.
Yeah.
He's all about them going deeper here, I believe. We'll let him speak for it later in the week. But I believe that's his stance on that. We'll come back. Carl Sachs projected numbers against what they actually are. Looking for value in the NBA numbers game right here at VC.
Numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Whether you're at home, on the road, or on the go, now there's more ways than ever to tune in to VSiN. Stream us live on VSiN.com, the VSiN Watch app, YouTube TV, iHeartRadio, Fire TV, Roku, or Sirius XM channel 158. Look at all those logos.
Love it.
Here's the thing. You only have to pick one of them.
I feel like there's room for a couple more.
I think there is. See a little space in the right corner, right. The bottom left? Yeah. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Best listeners in the game. Bobby Geddes. The Oberg triple bogey on the last hole moved me from first to third in my pool. A difference of 44 units. And guess what? I don't care. Yesterday was awesome. And congrats on your guys' great weekend. Bobby, great attitude. Thank you. Primetime, Cowboys _ Cubs 1. Yo. Hey, man. I also got on Rory when he drifted to double digits after Thursday. Good for you. I had Rosie preflop tickets at 135-1 and 150-1, so stood to win way more with him winning the playoff, but found myself rooting for Rory. Great roller coaster ride the entire day.
What a tease. Right? Especially Rose hitting that putt on 18. I did not see that coming. Oh, I really did not see that coming.
I think my exact words were, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Doug Wedge, imagine not having a ticket on Rory, but outrights on the three guys right behind him for most of the tournament, Bryson, Ludwig, and Connors. Yep, that would be me. Hashtag pain, he says.
Heard a lot of that. We didn't really talk about it. I am shocked that Bryson just kind of disappeared on Sunday.
Yeah, I am too.
I was expecting a fight out of him and Oberg. As long as Oberg was lingering around, I thought he was going to put up a fight.
Those guys had a bunch of opportunities. Before they actually got into it late, they had a bunch of opportunities earlier to get it. Jim Hogren. Cashed Rory at 7-1 and Rose 65-1 first round leader. Good for you. Let's go. Looking for the monster year from Rory now with the pressure off. That's for sure. Pressure is off. PGA Championship at Quail Hollow and the Open in his backyard are two of his favorite courses. Just bet him at 5-1 and 6-1 and fully expect him to win one. Jason H. 11, easily a top five major I've ever watched. I had a couple of Rory futures and caved in the middle of the round and added a bet on Rose. I handled the pressure worse than Rory. Jack Hannon, I like this one. He says, high fives with fans do not determine a person's character. Rory has more class in his little finger than Bryson in his entire body. It's called class and respect for the game. Congratulations. And then Big Kahuna, great Masters. How about sitting with Oberg tickets, T5? Ugh.
Right. Oh, man. Yeah, well, I had some fun losers, too. That's for sure. Morikawa and did you see what Shane Lowry did? Lowry comes into the round, what, three shots off the lead? Goes 9 over par on his last in his last round. Like, phew. I had top 10s on him, top 10s on Morikawa. It could have been a huge week.
You won your German standoff between Jaeger and Langer.
That was quite a hit on Twitter from our listeners on Friday. I'm sitting in the pool watching the Masters at the end. I'm watching it. And yes, I got that home. I got Jaeger for top German. And then Gil, if you had told me Max Homa was going to shoot 3 under par, 4 under, wherever he finished at, and asked me about how I felt about my Zach Johnson matchup with him, I'd be like, yeah, I have no shot. Obviously, I lost.
I had an eye on Max Homa the whole time. Yeah, you win that by one stroke.
I'll take that one. 5-1-1 in tournament matchups.
And then Corey Connors, top 20.
Top 20.
Well done. Yep. Well done. Let's talk some NBA. Carl Sack joins us now. Killer Sports, killercappers.com. You're joining us courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. Once again, one of the great handicappers in any sport there is. I will follow his picks blindly. How you doing, Carl?
I'm doing good. How are you guys?
Doing very well. Let's start with the play-in before we get to the projected series prices. Anything in the play-in games, the 7-8s tomorrow, where we have two big spreads. Warriors favored by 7 over the Grizzlies in the 7-8 out west. The Magic favored by 5 over the Hawks in the 7-8 out east.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the playoffs getting rolling here. This is my favorite time of year. As far as the games go on Tuesday, the only bet that I've made so far is on Golden State. I think that Butler is probably questionable. If you watched yesterday's game, he banged knees with Kawhi at the very end there and was pretty gimpy. But I would expect him to end up playing. That's my guess. Even if he doesn't play, these are two teams really headed in opposite directions. Golden State's been playing fantastic since Butler came over. And they've started to get help. They've become healthy. Memphis has just been, they've really tailed off in the second half of the season. They've not been able to beat winning teams. I think they're like, I want to say 2-13 since the trade deadline against teams with winning records. These two teams just played each other a couple of weeks ago in Memphis, and Golden State won that game by 9, I believe it was. And then I think most importantly, I would say, well, maybe not most importantly, but Jalen Wells getting hurt a few games back, breaking his wrist. He's their best perimeter defender, and they lost Brandon Clark a month ago or so. He was a solid perimeter defender. So I see Golden State winning this game easily.
Okay. How about Wednesday in the 9-10s? Bulls favored by 1 over the Heat. Kings favored by 5 over the Mavericks.
To be honest, I made a small bet on Chicago here. I think Chicago's just been playing really well lately. And, Miami hasn't really shown anything that's impressed me. But it's a small bet. Otherwise, I probably won't get too involved on the Wednesday games.
Okay. Let's go to the actual series that have been established now. We talked about them last segment. We'll bring them up again. These are the 4-5s and the 3-6s. We'll put them up on the screen here. These are the DraftKings prices. The Nuggets have moved down. A lot of Clippers have taken some money here. So that's the one that has changed the most dramatically. Which of these four, Carl, is the one where your projected numbers showed the most difference?
I am pretty high on the Lakers. If you look into some of their numbers with Luka on the court, with Finney-Smith on the court, it's kind of scary, actually. It looks like some of those what do they call those Warriors teams, like the death lineup or whatever, with Draymond at the five. Like there's some they're concerning. If you're OKC, terrible first round matchup for Minnesota, because Minnesota's, you know, they're a solid team. They've been playing well lately, but they've also had an easy schedule. I think that's helped. But despite Minnesota playing their best ball of the year, I think the Lakers are going to make quick work of this.
Well, I don't know if you projected this yet, but did you do a potential Golden State Houston series price?
I actually think, you know, you could have made the argument yesterday that Golden State, you know, needed this actually could turn out to work out well for Golden State.
Yeah.
Despite, you know, yeah, they would have liked to have had a week off, but if they win tomorrow, which I'm anticipating them doing, then they're still going to get a good 4 or 5 days off. And I think of all the teams that they could play, I think Houston's the team they want to play. Houston just doesn't have the profile of a successful playoff team, in my opinion. They do have some pieces, but I would definitely make them the favorite, despite being less rested and not having home court against Houston.
Yeah, I we talked about it last week. I think it's you never want to play an extra game, as you point out. But on the other hand, I don't know. It sets up kind of nice, right, to take on a young Houston team, at least on paper.
Because if they had won yesterday, then they'd be playing the Lakers, I believe, first round.
That's correct.
And that would have been wow.
Yeah. Okay. To the game ones, then let's go back to the series that have already been established. To the game ones, the respective game ones in those 4, 5, and 3 sixes on Saturday. The Knicks are favored by 7, totals 220.5. Pacers favored by 4.5 over the Bucks in game one, 225.5 the total. In the West, Denver's favored by 3 over the Clippers in game one, total 225. And the Lakers favored by 5 over the T-Wolves, the total's at 217.5. Did you end up with anything there?
I'm still working on these games. I think the Denver Clippers series is going to be very good. Both these times, I mean, it's kind of tough to tell what you've got with Denver with the coaching to the late coaching change. But the past 3 games since that happened, they've been playing pretty well together. So combine that with their, you know, their experience, I think that that's going to be a really good series. Clippers have been playing on really great lately too. So I think that that's probably the most accurate line and a series price that I'm going to a series price in a game that I'm probably going to stay away from. In the other 3 games, I would lean towards the favorite in all 3 of them. I think you guys touched on it a little bit earlier. I'm not sure what's going to go on with Lillard in that series. If he maybe makes his way back, I wouldn't anticipate it in game one, but I think I would lay the points in all 3 of those games.
Okay, but as far as tomorrow night's concerned and Wednesday, Warriors tomorrow laying the wood, and you are leaning towards the Bulls on Wednesday. You get that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I'd say that Golden State game tomorrow is I'm surprised. It opened at 7, and I'm seeing it drop down to 6.5 in some places. That just baffles me. Maybe somebody knows that a Butler's hurt, but I think that's going to be a blowout.
It is interesting. If the Warriors just coast in that game, and then they'll like imagine all their key players sitting late, and all of a sudden that 7-2 looks like crazy like a fox at that point. Thank you, Carl. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on, Gil.
Paul Sporer on Major League Baseball next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Take your betting to the next level with FirstBet. Whether it's Santa Anita, Gulfstream Park, or the road to the Kentucky Derby in Preakness, FirstBet puts the action at your fingertips. Sign up now at FirstBet.com. That's the number one, stbet.com. Use promo code VSiN200 to score a 20% rebate on all your wagers for the first 60 days, up to $200. Don't miss out. Bet smarter today at FirstBet.com. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Always appreciate the feedback. Kevin Ryan, Grasshopper Gilly, you now know the full meaning of a golf sweat. Oh, trust me, I've bet golf before. I'm quite aware. But that was that was one of a kind yesterday.
That was one of a kind.
Brandon.
He won and lost the tournament like 16 times over Saturday.
It was
Sunday.
Amazing. Yeah, that's exactly right.
I've never seen so many great shots and so many terrible shots from one golfer in a big time moment.
His approaches at 15, I hope I get this right, 15, 17, and the playoff were the 3 shots of his life.
And then
in between, he would mess up the putts.
On the other hand, the 13.
13 into the water, worst thing ever.
Where he lays up to play safe.
Yes.
And then into the water with one of the worst shots I've ever seen Rory McIlroy hit.
As we described in the opening segment. Like, if he loses the tournament, that's the shot they show forever. Brandon Kyles, underrated moment. Rory sticking with driver on the third after just missing the fairway on 1 and 2. Yes, could have easily conceded and hit 3 wood after Bryson found the fairway with his, but instead bombed the driver and birdied while Bryson bogeyed. Yes, Rory at that point was 1 back after two holes before that to start the round. He was up 2 holes. Rules for society. Nick, can you help me out with how the LIV guys qualify for majors? Fantastic weekend. Thanks. It's a combination of factors, one of which is if they won before there, right, Kelly?
Yeah, Master. I mean, if you ever win a Masters, you're invited back forever. And this is where when the LIV PGA Tour kind of separation occurred, the majors all tried to, like, play it down the middle, right? They didn't want to get involved. So, for these guys, it's a number of different ways. You could be top 50 world golf rankings, but remember, LIV is not picking up world golf rankings, so more of these guys will fall out of it, and you're going to see less and less as we go on. But yeah, it's past performance and past majors, Masters, that kind of stuff that are getting these guys in.
Roger Jones, well done, guys, on your Masters plays. I never could have played Rory. As I said, I wouldn't be sucked in by the experts talking about how well he was playing going in. I thought the pressure was too great and doubling down at better odds. Classic. And Scotty B726, is Scotty not saying a word after putting the green jacket on Rory the way it always has goes, or no low amateur either? So what he's referring to is in the Butler cabin. First, they do the Butler cabin thing, which is for the television audience, right? Yeah. Where Nance sits there and he's like, and now, right? My favorite one was when Fred Couples won. And he said to Fred Couples, you who went to the University of Houston, me who broadcasted at the University of Houston. And Couples is like, yeah, whatever, Jim. But in the Butler cabin, there was no low amateur, which is weird.
I don't know what that story was.
And then Scotty was just like, here you go, man.
But it's such an awkward item.
It's awkward because it's made for TV. The one that they didn't show yesterday, I don't think, which is the real one, is when they do it outside.
Yes.
So they do it all over again, which is for the patrons there at Augusta. And that went much better.
I don't know. I'm kind of over the Butler cabin. Like, it's felt like it should have been retired in 1978 or something.
You, a Houston graduate, me, an announcer at Houston.
Well, especially yesterday too. It's like I hate forced sportsmanship in sports where, like, they, you know, we make all these kids, like, shake hands after games after we want them to beat the crap out of each other on a football field or something in high school, right? Like Scottie Scheffler, I gotta sit there and give this jacket to this guy. Like, well, I just played my ass off for 4 days trying to beat him.
It's Augusta. You gonna do what we tell you to do. Ladies and gentlemen, let's talk some Major League Baseball. Paul Sporer joins us now at Sporer on Twitter, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. How you doing, Paulie?
I'm doing well. How are you, Gil?
I'm good. Do you watch the Masters? Do you bet on the Masters? Do you do any of that?
I don't. I used to watch it a lot more. My dad was a big golf fan, so I would kind of keep up with it. I usually have a general idea of what's going on, but I was not dialed in this week.
A general idea. Let me ask you a couple of things about it. Let me go to the bottom of baseball. Let's start with the Rockies. The Rockies not only get swept by the Padres, they don't score a run. This is the first time since 2017 a team has failed to score a run in a series. They're 3-12 are the Rockies. It matches their worst start over 15 games in franchise history. They have a -44 run differential, which, if you projected it out, would be the worst run differential in the history of baseball. They've scored, let me just say this. They've scored 40 runs, and 19 of them have come in 2 games. I could go on, you understand. Worst whiff rate, the fewest batted balls. I guess my question is this. Have we determined in the off-season debate of who will be the worst team, White Sox, Marlins, or Rockies, have we landed on the worst team here?
Yeah, I think we have. You know, the Marlins are actually playing some inspired ball. They had the walk-off wins against Pittsburgh. They're a game over 500. I still don't, you know, I don't think that they're any good or anything. And I've maintained that I think the White Sox will be regular bad this year, which is to say, like, a low 60s win team at the most. They'll get better as the season goes. I think the White Sox will, because of the prospects that they should be able to add. The Rockies, I mean, there's a reason that my colleague, and I believe your colleague, I believe he has a VSiN show, Jeff Erickson.
Yes.
Called them the paste eaters. And I picked that up from him, and I've always used it because it's so accurate. They don't know what the heck they're doing. You got 29 teams and you got someone in the corner eating paste, and that's the Rocky. It is top down, man. They don't do anything right. They got a great stadium. They have some nice loyal fans, and I feel bad for those fans. And that stadium, like I said, that place rules. Coors is awesome. Got to watch a couple games there a few years ago. Great place to watch ball. They suck. I mean, I cannot think of anything positive to go for with them. Even with the Marlins, I can at least come up with some positive things. You know, they got a Max Meyer coming. They got Sandy, at least for now, but they'll get trade capital for him. What can you say positively about the Rockies? Chase Dolander's coming up. I guess that's the one thing. He and Veen. But why didn't Veen break camp? Now, would that have made them score a run this weekend? Probably not. But it's indicative of the constant failure of that organization. At every turn, they seem to make the wrong move. And again, that starts at the top and with ownership, not just with GM regime. And until that team is sold, I think the Rockies are going to continue to kind of face that. Uphill battle is an understatement. What's way worse than an uphill battle? It's Sisyphus pushing up like five rocks up the hill. It sucks to be a Rockies fan, I'm sure.
Excellent Greek mythology reference, also coupled with eating paste in the corner. Well done. Right. Let me talk about a team. Okay, so I do these monthlies, right? I just started doing them last year. We won in June, a 25-1 and a 17-1 on the Astros. We came an out away from hitting a 65-1. This is the seventh go at it we've had. So we had the 6 months last year. So this is March, April, and I had the Twins. This is the worst of all my seven tries at this, right? The Twins are 5-11. 5-11, not too good, in the words of Steve Spurrier famously. They have a minus 13 run differential. Maybe they shouldn't be as bad as 5-11, but what's wrong with them? How have they sucked so bad early?
I'm a bit stunned on this one, because I thought this was going to be a ball club that, you know, they had the collapse last year and they didn't do a whole lot in the offseason, but I understood with them. There were some teams that I didn't quite understand why they had a muted offseason. With the Twins, I understood it. I think they were still one of the best teams in this division. They're bringing back most of their talent. They've got good starting pitching with some depth. I'm a big David Festa and Zebby Matthews fan. I think both should be in the rotation right now over Chris Paddock and Simeon Woods Richardson. And of course, Pablo Lopez getting hurt brought Festa up. So then kick out one of the other guys and put Zebby there. But the offense has been anemic, and that's been a bit of a surprise to me too, is that they're just not hitting. They're just not playing well, and I don't know if there's some sort of malaise that has carried over from last year. It's really hard to say that. You had a whole offseason, winter and spring. I don't know why that would be the case. I just don't think that they're playing particularly well right now, and I don't have a lot of answers for them. I look at this, there is still a lot of talent. You know, Royce Lewis got hurt again, but you got Buxton healthy. You got Edward Julian actually playing some solid ball. I'm a big fan of his, so I'm kind of excited that he's back up and playing. Wallner, Correa, Castro, Larnach, they've got talent. It's not like the deepest lineup or anything, but 1-9, they put out competent players there, and they're just playing like crap. Now, if they didn't have the collapse last year, and obviously your self-interest there with the bet, would we necessarily be making such a deal out of 5-11, even though it is a bad start for them? Probably not. But when you pair it with last year, it really does start to look bad. And I don't have great answers for them. They got a tough series against the Mets coming up. And I don't want to say it's must win, because it's not. It's definitely not. But they got to be feeling like, hey, we got to get this ball rolling. Because here's the thing. Tigers, Royals, and Guardians, they're not playing the greatest ball right now, but they're all 500 or better, and they're not going to let up. So they can ill afford to fall too much further behind here, the Twins. And I think we might see some drastic moves soon if they don't turn this around relatively quickly here in the next, three, four series.
Padres right now with 13 wins, 2-game lead in terms of the win column for March, April bettors. Padres were 28-1 pre-flop, 28-1. To win March, April. So congratulations, at least right now. Still a long way to go. 16 more days of baseball, 17 more before that is settled. Paul, thank you as always. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Gil. Take care.
All Spore at Spore. We'll come back. Wes Reynolds, his thoughts on the Masters and the majors moving forward.